B-Pod Studios.
The Sports Hub.
Now. Sports talk. While you're on the clock. This is Zolak and Bertrand.
The sports show radio host.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Josie's on a vacation far away. Come around and talk it over. So many things that I want to say. You know I like my girls a little bit older. I just want to use your love tonight. I don't want to lose your love tonight.
Zolak and Bertrand, neither one of them are here. It's me, Christian Arcand, alongside Ted Johnson with Big Sarge over there in the glass case of takes. And we got, of course, T-Bone back behind the glass, along with B-Rob taking your phones at 617-779-0985. I keep doing this. I keep teasing the Mets thing and then not delivering. And I may not be able to here either because Brad Stevens is going to talk in just a few minutes, so we'll stay on standby for that. In the meantime, the Celtics will be resuming their season here, Ted. And after their pretty painless first round, and the fact that the Toronto Raptors also had a pretty painless first round, two teams that swept going into the next round, I'm very interested in seeing how the Celtics look against a real team. And when I say the Raptors, a real team, I mean the Raptors, despite the fact that the Celtics absolutely pasted them in the regular season. That was a couple Fridays ago, just smoked them, really. I mean, that game was over in the first quarter. And I watched that game, and I was pretty pumped up about it. I was thinking,
when you say
wow.
Regular season, you mean the
In the bubble regular season. Those eight games that they played that were regular season games. And the Celtics just crushed them.
They did.
And I remember watching that and thinking, okay.
And they had Kyle Lowry play in that game.
Or did Lowry play or not play?
I believe he played in that
game. Did he play? I feel like someone didn't play. That was the weekend of my wedding, so I only watched part of it. But it was just such a beatdown that I was watching it going, man, maybe I was wrong about these guys. Maybe if the Celtics get the Raptors in the second round, that's exactly who they want to face. I think Toronto's good. They've been better than the Celtics all year long. They had a better record. They were better in the bubble. They lost their best player last year after winning the championship and still ended up winning the Atlantic Division and pushing the Celtics down into the second spot. And I'm very, very interested in this series. I think it's going to be probably the most important series the Celtics have played, and I say that knowing that if they win, they go on to the Eastern Conference Finals. But I don't expect them really to hang with Milwaukee. If it's Milwaukee who they face there, if it's somebody else, great. But how are you feeling about the Celtics going into this weekend, knowing that they first of all had all of this happen here in the NBA, and now they have to take on the team they've been looking up at in the standings all year long?
You know what? I'm fascinated to see what happens in the series, because I think it's going to be a pretty telling about maybe where the stars of this team are and where they are moving forward. I think it's going to be huge for Tatum and Brown to see how do they play. This is, let's face it, with Kyrie on this team the last couple of years, they haven't probably been able to be fully themselves and take charge of this team. It is clearly their team along with Kemba, but pretty much the two young guys. And this is their team. What do they want to do? To leave their mark. I always question a little bit their maturity, you know, their want to, their competitiveness to some degree. This will test that. And I'm fascinated to see how that goes. One thing I am concerned about, and everybody seems to dismiss it, and I get it. The loss of Gordon Hayward because of the injuries, you know, look, you haven't been able to count on him.
I don't dismiss that at all. I don't think that really mattered in that first round, but I don't dismiss that at all.
I think it's a bigger loss than people want to give it credit to.
Huge loss, especially against a team like the Raptors.
And here's why. Well, let me ask you, why do you think it's a bigger loss than what people are thinking?
Two reasons. Number one, because they didn't miss him against the Sixers. I mean, right? I mean, he got hurt, and they didn't miss him, and they
swept
Philadelphia right on out of there. Philadelphia is a disaster. That team is a mess, and the Celtics should have swept them, and I'm glad they did. I'm glad they didn't let him hang around, because I do think Embiid is a good player, but he was the only one. He was only good in the first half in all four of those games, and there was nobody else doing a blessed thing on offense other than that. So the 76ers, you should have swept them. The Raptors are a team that all year long has been better than you. The Sixers, people say, well, Ben Simmons wasn't playing. Ben Simmons, when he was playing, got the Sixers to the sixth seed. They were a six-seed team. They weren't really that good ever. They were good against the Celtics in the regular season, but without Simmons, they just couldn't hang. The Raptors can hang and have hung with you all year long. In fact, they've done more than that. They've kept you below them in the standings. And I think for the Celtics, their identity is so entrenched in their starting five that if you take a big piece of that, like Gordon Hayward, out of it, like if you lose Daniel Tice, you can replace him with Kanter. And I feel like that's not as big of a drop-off. You take out Gordon Hayward and replace him with Marcus Smart offensively, that is a huge drop-off. Huge.
Totally agree. Totally agree. And so when people talk about, you know, Gordon Hayward not being missed, they go, let me ask you, of all the guys on the bench right now for the Celtics, can anybody on the bench for the Celtics, and I know Hayward didn't come off the bench. He started, but he's also like Marcus Smart. You can almost say it's a toss up between Marcus Smart and Gordon Hayward being a starter. So Marcus, obviously Gordon Hayward's a better offensive player, so you put him out there as a starter. Mm-hmm. But my point is there anybody on the Celtics bench that can win you a game?
No,
not one.
No.
Okay.
There's guys who can contribute. I think Grant Williams can contribute, and Kanter contributed in that last draft. Can they win
Tatum's
you again?
Off,
no.
Brown's off. Tatum and Brown are off. They have bad nights. You know, Kimba gets hurt, and he misses half. Whatever. Can anybody on the bench win you a game? The answer is no.
No.
Can Gordon Hayward win you a game in a series?
Yes.
You're damn right he can.
Of course he can.
He can go off for 30 and be the key part of it. They don't have anybody off the bench that can come in and maybe win a game when the stars aren't playing as well. Gordon Hayward wasn't considered ready a star with all the injuries he's had. That's a guy, even though you think of as a secondary kind of guy on this team, who can still win you a game. They don't have anybody besides Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, maybe Kemba Walker then quote-unquote win you a game like Gordon Hayward could.
Yeah, and, you know, not for nothing, but the Raptors have Ibaka off the bench. They have Norman Powell off the bench. They have guys who maybe won't win you the game, but they'll make a bigger impact in it than anybody on the Celtics. I think that's clear. They're a deep team, and their starters are also very, very good.
One thing I feel like I've noticed when I watched this kind of the restart in the bubble with the Celtics is a more kind of concerted effort to be aggressive going to the basket from multiple sources. So I think Kemba, I think Jaylen, and I think Tatum are all making concerted efforts to attack the rim much more than they ever used to. A lot of those guys would just settle for jump shots, three-pointers. They weren't attacking the rim that much. Now that they are doing that, to me, it just opens up the defense more. The defense crashing, and you have more options to kick it out. Guys are finishing more at the rim than they ever have. And it's just not one guy doing it or two guys. It's multiple guys doing it. And I think it just opens up your offense a lot more when you have guys being aggressive going to the hoop.
All right, 617-779-0985 is the phone number. We'll hear from Brad Stevens when we come back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Former QB, always laser-focused.
It's like going to bed at night, bringing a rattlesnake in your room. I'm sleeping on a hot spot, on a hot rock.
And the guy who was always by his side.
The Lakers, UFOs, mayonnaise, all in the mix here.
Zolak and Bertrand.
If that makes any sense. No.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
.1217 here on the Sports Hub. Arkan, Ted Johnson, Mike Sarge-Riley, all here in studio. We're waiting to hear from Brad Stevens, although many NBA teams have canceled their media availability today. So if the Celtics do follow suit, we will not be hearing from Brad Stevens today. And haven't heard from him all week, as a matter of fact.
I'd like to hear from Brad.
I'd like to hear from Brad, too. He was supposed to be on the show the last 2 days, three days?
That's correct.
And that kept getting postponed. He was supposed to speak to the media at noon today. That so far hasn't happened. We'll see if it does. In the meantime, we'll go to your Celtics calls at 617-779-0985. Let's see who's been waiting longer. That would be Jim in the car with a thought on the Celtics-Raptors series. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, guys. I actually do like the Raptors in this series just because I think they're actually more equipped to deal with, you know, things that come at them. They're a very smart team, the closest thing to the Spurs. But the one large advantage that I think the Celtics have in this series, and it's not insignificant for playoff basketball, is their best players are more equipped to win one-on-one ISO battles, whether that's Tatum or Kemba or even to an extent Brown, than the Raptors are. And I think that matters when things break down, and things are going to break down offensively against good defense in playoff basketball. And you look at teams with success in the NBA, it's usually wing players that can create their own offense. And I you know, that's the one thing, and I think it's an important factor that the Celtics have over the Raptors.
All right, Jim, thanks for the call. I tend to agree with you. I think the Celtics have better one-on-one players. They have guys who can create their own shot, create their own offense. Kemba Walker, Jason Tatum, I think, are probably better at that than any one player on the Toronto Raptors, right?
Oh, yeah,
I
mean, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, those two can get to the... And I say Kyle that Lowry. Knowing full well that Lowry and Van Vliet have been playing out of their minds, those two guys. Van Vliet in particular. He's looking like an all-star.
He's a pro's pro.
Like a real, like, maybe all-NBA type player right there.
Yeah. And he was the guy who came off the bench for a long time for Toronto. So, yeah, the only thing I worry about is a lot of people want to put, you know, Tatum in this. This is just another step in his progression, all right? This was a huge year for him. Let's just face it, right? I mean, the Jason Tatum is kind of – we're all hopeful. I know the Celtics think he's the next great thing, and I think he's got that potential. I just still need to see more. And I think this is a huge, huge series for a guy like Jason Tatum to kind of decide what kind of player he wants to be in this league moving forward. He's finally committed to the defensive side of the ball this year. You've seen him play better defense. But his scoring is just – it's gone to another level. He's just making smarter shots, better decisions. But this is – to me, this is the as much as he'll be tested – is in this series. How does he respond in this series? I think it's going to go a long way to what we think the future is for this football,
yeah,
this basketball team.
And you're right. I mean, they got some real strong defenders, one-on-one defense. Siakam is a great defender, and Anobi is a great defender. He'll probably have Tatum, I would think. That'd be the matchup there. If they go one-on-one, they might go zone. Nick Nurse is very creative in Toronto with the sets and schemes and the way he sort of attacks his opponents. I'm really interested in the coaching battle, you know, because I think Brad Stevens is a good coach too. But you have to hand it to Nick Nurse. They won the championship last year, and Kawhi Leonard left, and they still won the division this year. Like that is a testament to, I think, the players too, but certainly to that coach for keeping them all on track and for implementing systems that remain successful. I mean, even without their best player.
I totally agree. And one thing I do worry about, getting back to just kind of the ISO ball, like, don't you think the Celtics offense is better when the ball's popping? Like when it's moving, when it's got there's flow. Obviously, in the playoffs, things slow down. It's more of a half court. You see more ISO. If that's the case, if that defense is so good and the ball's not popping and it gets sticky, that does not favor the Celtics in this series. The ball needs to be moving around the horn, and there needs to be good, you know, kind of flow and guys and everybody kind of contributing, I think, for Celtics ultimately to have success.
Yeah, let's go to Chris in the car with a thought on the Celtics. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, guys. So I think what you guys aren't talking about enough is the matchup that we've had against Toronto this year with pretty much the same roster. We've won 3 out of 4 games. We've won in Boston. We've won in Toronto. And we've even won in the bubble against these guys. Yeah, they have a great bench and they have a good coach. But it's a star-driven league. And if you look down the roster, I think the Celtics have more star talent than the Raptors do. Yeah, this could go 6, but ultimately I think the Celtics are moving on pretty easily. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. And you know what? I've heard other people say this. I don't think that caller's alone. You know, I mean, they have had success this year. The Celtics beat them in the second game of the year, I think it was, and they've handled them pretty well this year. It's certainly in the bubble.
That's the second game of the season, and this is the playoffs.
Right.
This is NBA playoffs, and these are still guys that were. Tatum hasn't arrived yet. Jaylen Brown has not arrived yet. You see tons of potential. You see that what they could be. But don't think these guys are seasoned vets that have been in a lot of playoff runs and know exactly how to handle this situation. This is still going to be very, very new for them, considering like the shadow. They're not living in Kyrie, Irving's shadow, and this is their team on the biggest stage. It's not, you know, game two of a long regular season. It's, you know, the second round of the NBA playoffs, and you guys now are the guys. How do they respond?
And that, not for nothing either, but there was one game, the game the Raptors won, they won in Boston, and they handled them. Kyle Lowry had 30 points. They won by 16. Yeah. Serge Ibaka had 20 points. It was a blow. I mean, it wasn't a blowout, but it was close to one. And I remember that game. The Celtics didn't look great. But, you know, I think the matchup's a good matchup for Boston. Is it great? No. I don't think you can say that because Toronto's been ahead of them all year. But it's better than having to go play Giannis and the Bucks. Right, it's better than having to go play, you know, LeBron and the Lakers or Kawhi and the Clippers, and I know they won't play them to the finals, but in terms of star power, the Celtics have the Raptors beat there. I would agree with that. Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum, I think, are two bigger stars and guys that you would, if you could take anybody out of any of those rosters, it'd probably be, you know, Siakam's a close third, but I think Kemba and Tatum are the two guys that you would start with right there, and that means a lot in the playoffs. It does.
It does. No, it absolutely does. So, I mean, the good thing is, and I talked to, Mario Elie. Remember Mario Elie for the Rockets back in the day? And Mario has always said there's huge, huge, huge benefit to going as far as you can in the playoffs. Like this, I mean, the Celtics if you really look at it, it's a young team. It's a younger team. And it needs these kind of experiences and, this kind of go through this type of thing for them to get galvanized and get better and learn for years to come.
Yeah. Mario Elie, I hadn't thought of that name in a while.
Great guy.
I remember him on those Rockets teams. You know, he was basically just sort of, riding on Nakeem's coattails.
Yeah,
there,
I mean, he'd just chill out there.
He was
on
him and Cassell. Yeah, he'd just sort of stand around waiting for the ball.
Kick the ball out to me, man. I'll hit that three.
Yeah. You know, if I'm not open, I'll pass it, but I'll just be standing right here.
Mario Elie, that's a good dude right there, man.
Yeah, yeah. I like those Rockets team with young Robert Horry, Sam Cassell, Mad Max.
That's right.
Otis Thorpe was on those teams. The only team that won when Jordan went to go play baseball, Hakeem and the Rockets took over.
Yeah,
and
do you always have to say that, though, for those teams?
Of course you do. If they had won when Jordan was playing, then you wouldn't say it.
All right.
What? That's fair to say.
Well, I don't like that I have
Mr.
to.
Mr. Houston over there.
I know. I don't like that you have to caveat it that they won the whole thing the year Jordan was out. You have to put that little part.
2 years Jordan was out.
2 years Jordan out. Like, you don't have to put that on there, do you?
I mean, you kind of do, yeah.
Okay. Hey, can we just, my man Mason Suso, I when I'm listening to the Felger Mash show and I want to scream through the Robert Edwards, this just in is not going to be close.
Robert Williams
is not going to be close to being the next Hakeem Olajuwon.
He's not going to be Hakeem, you don't think?
No, I do not think.
Sorry, Mason.
That's a big difference. The old Patriots running back, Robert Edwards. There.
Yeah, that's. I'm sorry. It's great. But yeah,
stay off the beach.
Hakeem had a little bit more than just dunking on the pick and roll. There was a little bit more to his game. I don't know if you got the chance to watch him. Maybe you guys are too young.
Hakeem? No, I loved Hakeem.
Hakeem was the best.
Hakeem was an artist.
I think
down
Hakeem,
the low
I
block.
Think during that time in the early '90s and. When they were winning, when Jordan wasn't playing, he was probably, you could argue, he was the best player in the NBA at that time.
Hakeem, and that was in a time where there were really good big men in the NBA. And Hakeem used to give it to Shaq and Ewing and David Robinson and you name it. I mean, nobody could guard him. And that was probably the best era of bigs in NBA history, I would say.
The most skilled bigs the game has ever seen, man, during that era.
You know, I was watching Joel Embiid sort of huffing and puffing up the court, and he really gives you more of an appreciation, I think, for the NBA in the 80s and 90s when these big men, these big seven-footers, would be doing that all game long and leading the team in points and scoring and sort of everything else and leading them into the next round. Like, Embiid is young. He's 25, 26. He was exhausted in the third quarter of those games.
It's funny, the point differential that Embiid would have in the first half versus the second half, it was laughable. I mean, it was just like, he gave you everything he had in the first half, and the second half, he had no gas left in this thing. You know, not only that, were these guys running up and down the court, these big guys, but they were working hard on the boards, fighting for the ball down in the low post, asking for, demanding for the ball in the low post. Now they just hang out there in the three-point line, set screens, direct traffic. Stay there at the,
all the centers shoot threes now.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
If you're a center, you don't shoot threes. It's like, well, we can't use you then. Sorry.
Right.
Sorry, Andre Drummond. Sorry. Sorry, any big man who can't shoot. Like, Daniel Tice how many times is he just standing there wide open at the top of the three, just contemplating whether or not to take a shot in that series because Embiid was too tired to go guard him? But that's what you have to do. I mean, that's what the game sort of evolved to. And some would say it's devolved into that, but I mean, I don't know. It's just sort of the way these things work. And I don't know. I like the NBA now. I think the NBA now is just full of really great athletes who play an interesting style of ball. I love watching the shooters. I think that the volume shooting's fun. Yep. And it's not for everybody. I understand that. But the NBA has always sort of been like that. Like, my whole life, whenever I'd watch basketball, there'd always be people saying, well, it was better in the 70s. You know, it was better before this. In the 90s, well, everybody palms the ball and carries the ball. It was better in the 80s with a two-handed pass. And, like, you know, that just keeps happening over and over. Everybody pines for the old days of the NBA. But I like where the NBA is right now.
Don't you? I kind of pine. I do miss.
I'm not saying you're doing that. I just, you know.
The really skilled big man in the post. You know, not the big man that hanging out by the three-point line that has a nice touch, you know, can shoot free throws. The guy that could get the ball and create shots in the paint. You don't see big men able to do that anymore.
I know. There's not that many. There's Anthony Davis, and it's about it. Like, there's really not that many. It's just sort of the way it is right now. And you're right. I think that was something I think a lot of people look back on in the old days in the NBA and sort of miss that because it was fun. It was fun watching these giants, you know, Kareem with the skyhooks and Robert Parrish and Mutombo wagging his finger and all that stuff. You know, guys had real personality, and they all had real skills, too. Now, you know, mostly the big men are used as defensive rim protectors. That's about it.
That's it.
Like Rudy Gobert is mostly just a rim protector.
If you can defend, rebound, Hassan and Whiteside, pick and roll, you know, dunk it. That's what's expected of most big men in the NBA today.
Yeah.
And if you can shoot a three-pointer, you know, then it's a bonus.
You can shoot a three-pointer, you're going to get paid.
You will get paid.
Ask Brooke Lopez. He can't do anything in the post. He shoots threes, he got paid. That was it.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
You have all that size, and you know, come on, go get dirty. Get in there. You know, these guys don't want to muck it up, man. But they're smart because they know that's where the money is, shooting the three.
Mason Souza has chimed in on Twitter.
Come on, Mason.
At Teddy J Radio, at Christian Arcand, Time Lord will be better than Hakeem. He won't be the next Hakeem. He will be better than Hakeem. That's the hottest take of all time, I got to tell you.
Mason has been sticking to that take for a long time. He's out of his mind.
Yeah.
He doesn't even have a fraction of the talent Hakeem has. Sorry. He doesn't. The moves, the post moves. I'm amazed at how you just don't see any more real skilled big men in the low post that know how to, you know, I don't know, just create their own shots, put their back to it, beat guys one-on-one, face them up. You know, you see more turnaround, face them up, jump shots as opposed to getting to the rim. Don't see it anymore, man. And Keem was the best at that.
And Keem was awesome.
But yeah, you know what his best move? The dream shake.
Yeah. That was it. He put guys in the torture chamber.
The fall away, what's the shot?
Jumper there, yeah.
Yeah, but from the baseline. The fall away baseline shot.
Yeah.
You couldn't block it.
Yeah, you couldn't. I mean, you couldn't. And it's not like most defensive players weren't even close to him when he'd take the shot because they'd fall for a fake before that. And they'd be like out of bounds or something.
So you're absolutely right. So he didn't have to do the fall away.
Didn't even have to do it. Yeah. That was a fun time to be an NBA fan for sure. 617-779-0985 is the phone number. Noted 80s and 90s NBA fan Mike Sarge Riley has your headlines. And then we'll come back. I promise you we'll get to this Mets thing because it's funny. We'll get to that next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Got an itch for sports talk while you work?
So just dropped his phone down his shirt.
You want to know why? He was using it to scratch his back.
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Meet the Mets.
Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life because the Mets are really sucking the ball.
I don't know the rest of the song.
I'm impressed you knew that much.
I knew that much of it, yeah. Something over the wall, I don't know. It's the Mets.
Do you have a favorite song? Like a kind of a
favorite sports song?
Sports song?
Like San Diego Superchargers.
That's where you go. Yep,
pretty good one. I think Meet the Mets is probably the best one. You know, that's a good one. Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. That one sucks.
But the Houston Oilers used to have the kind of a summer one.
What was theirs?
Oh, it was something like
You can't tease that and not sing it.
Right. Houston has the Oilers, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air. We're on the ground. We're always in control. So when you think the Oilers, you're talking Super Bowl because we're the Houston Oilers. It's very much the same.
I thought that was the Dolphins song. Who ripped off who is the question?
That's the long-standing debate is which song came first. Me being a Texas guy, I'm going to have to assume the Dolphins ripped it off the Oilers at the time.
There's another thing like that, too, with the Saints and the Bengals. Who dat and who day? Which came first, who dat or who day?
I think it's something we got to get to the bottom of.
Well, maybe on another program we will. Or maybe we can do some independent investigations on our own there. Anyways, we played that song there, Meet the Mets, because the New York Mets are embroiled in a scandal. And it's a pretty funny one, honestly. It's not funny in the sense that everything that's going on here isn't funny, and you know, the protests and sort of displays and things that are going on here, players not wanting to play and all of that. I'm not saying that's funny, but what happened with the Mets is kind of sort of funny, because number one, their GM Brody Van Wagenen, and I always feel like I'm saying that wrong, let's just call him Brody because that's funnier. Just Brody was
going down, Brody.
Going down. Brody man, Nucci's. We got Brody on a hot mic before, I think, a press conference, talking to two people off camera, and you can't see who they are. And someone decided to record or post a video of Brody speaking off what he thought was off camera and certainly off mic. And here is what Brody had to say.
They're mulling that over. Baseball's trying to come up with a solution, saying, oh, you know, it'd be super powerful. Three of us here can't leave this room. They're saying, you know, it'd be really great if you just have them all take the field. Then they leave the field. And then they come back and play 8-10. And I was like, what?
What's it?
Rob. Because Jeff's scheduling is going to be a nightmare. There's so much at stake. And I said, Jeff, that's not happening.
They're not dealing with reality.
They're not playing, but that's Rob's instinct. And Rob, not exactly what you and I are talking about, at leadership level, he doesn't get it. He just doesn't get it. And
that's so...
Anyways, we're waiting. Jeff wants to hear, as soon as we hear from the Marlins, Conforto, whatever we do, we need to coordinate with the Marlins. So as soon as Conforto hears from Rojas, right, Miguel Rojas?
Yeah.
Let me know, because Jeff's standing by for that call.
Okay, so that was pretty much the meat and potatoes.
Probably hard
right
to
there.
Hear for people out there. But
it's hard to make it all out, but you could hear him saying he doesn't get it. He just doesn't get it. How can you let him go out? He was talking about Rob Manfred,
Commissioner
of Major League Baseball, and he also, in case you couldn't quite hear it there, said that Manfred was trying to force the Mets, maybe is a little strong, but get the Mets to have players leave the field at 7:10. And then an hour later, go back on the field at 8:10 and play the game. Meaning that the statement would be, we're walking off the field for an hour, and then we're going to come back and play at 8 o'clock. And as it turns out, and Brody was saying there, you know, he doesn't understand, he doesn't get it, he thinks we should still try and get this game in, even though the players don't want to play. Van Wagenen had to come out and release a statement clarifying it was not Rob Manfred who was pushing for that idea, but rather Mets owner Jeff Wilpon. And it was his idea to reconvene an hour after the protest, but that wasn't the only thing. Number one, it was followed up by a statement from Wilpon and a statement from his father, Fred Wilpon. Jeff and Fred both released statements. They're currently selling the team to either A-Rod or I forget who the other guy is that's trying to buy it. I mean, there's
a lot of...
whole situation
A-Rod
is ridiculous.
J-Lo. Yeah, Kraft consulted with those two about buying maybe the Mets.
Right, and there's another potential buyer whose name escapes me at the moment, but there's somebody else looking into buying the team as well. And so all that's going on. Brody's trashing the commissioner, finds out later it wasn't actually the commissioner but Jeff Wilpon's idea, trashes Jeff Wilpon in his apology, and then both Wilpons, father and son, release statements trashing Brody. And, I mean, the whole thing about it is just, first of all, how did this video get out? How did this video get posted? Because it wasn't like anybody hacked into the website. Okay. It's not like anybody stole anything. A 20-year-old Mets fan named Nick Albococo, and I'm probably saying that wrong, but Nick Albococo, who goes to the University of Maryland, is a journalism student, and was clicking around the Mets website to see if they were going to play the game. And on the Mets website was that video.
Oh, jeez.
Someone in the Mets organization uploaded that video to the New York Mets website. And I guess that tells you something about modern Major League media, is the fact that only one person in the entire country cared enough about whether the Mets were playing to click on that link that video. But that's neither here nor there. He was on the homepage. He doesn't know how long the kid Nick said. I don't know how long the video was there. But then I clicked on it. I heard Brody's comments and I couldn't believe it. And that is sort of how this all started. The kid tweeted it out and then that thing went viral. But man, what a ridiculous story this is.
The I feel like at the beginning of that audio, you hear the guy, hey, between the three of us.
Yeah, this can't leave this room.
This can't leave this room. So there's one,
please,
two,
no
three
one
people.
Upload this to the New York Mets website.
Oh, my gosh. Look, the, you know, interesting. I always feel like Major League Baseball owners are never really on the same page, right? And that's... I can't imagine how that would be taken in a locker room. You know, hey, let's do this. Let's go out. Let's not go out for the first hour, or we go out and we come back in and then we go back. I'm sure the players, if they were to hear it like as a suggestion, would have some issues.
Would have said bleep you.
Yeah, that's my guess.
Yeah. And they should have. That's a stupid suggestion. And by the way, Jeff Wilpon came out and said, hey, I only made that suggestion because it's going to be a real problem with scheduling. And it's like, well, that's sort of what Brody was saying, right? He was saying Manfred doesn't get it, and he was wrong about that. But if Wilpon, if you thought that was a good solution, if you thought, well, you know, we got these scheduling problems, let's have them do this thing and then come back after an hour and play the game, you don't get it.
Okay, you think NBA, you think owners of NFL football or any teams, like, get it? No, a lot of them don't, man. A lot of them have no clue and are more tone deaf or more out of touch than the average fan.
True.
Sometimes. So that's why you have commissioners to run your league.
Yeah, and also with baseball, they're running up against the clock here. If they keep missing games, like, the Cardinals have to play a doubleheader every day for the rest of the summer, I think. Like, they're playing doubleheaders all the way through Labor Day. Like, that's going on there. And they're running out of days. I mean, they're just not going to have enough days left to be able to finish the season if they keep doing stuff like this. So I understand Wilpon's hesitancy, but you don't go throwing that around like it's a good idea. And, you know,
he wasn't
also
throwing it around because he thought it was private.
That's true. He didn't throw it around. That's true. But Brody, you got to know, man. You got to know. I think he was right that Wilpon doesn't get it. But you also got to understand the fact there is a microphone on you. You know, there is a microphone on you. And if that microphone is even near you, even if it's not on, you got to treat it like it is. You can't go trashing the commissioner and trashing your boss. They're not going to be your boss too much longer, but still. And I say that because they're selling the team. But they also might fire Brody before they sell the team.
Probably.
That might be the last thing they do. I'd do that if I was them. What are you? You're going to go blabbing our little secret conversations out? And really, the person to be mad at is whoever uploaded the video.
There's always someone listening.
I'd love to know who that was.
Yeah.
Who uploaded that video? It'd be funny if it was Brody, you know?
Somebody has
doing everything.
Somebody has an axe to grind.
Pulling all those strings.
If there's three people in the room, isn't it one of the three that it had to be an accident? It had to be a complete accident.
I think it was raw video just from the press conference. It was just left running.
Oh, it wasn't a stream, though.
Okay.
It wasn't a stream. It was a video that you can click on, and it starts, you know, it rolls in. It wasn't just a stream that got left open. Someone clipped that and put it up there. That was done on purpose. That was deliberate. And I really would like to know who was doing that. Because that's sabotage.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Whoever that intern or person in Mets media is not going to have a job too much longer. And also, so might not Brody Van Wagenen.
But does this kind of illustrate the attitude maybe from some of the owners, like when it comes to players' issues? Like, hey, just go out there, come back in, sit for an hour, have a sandwich, and then go. Like, yeah, we hear you're social injustice, and you have your cause. Yeah, yeah, okay. Can we do it this way, and then we get on to playing our games? Unfortunately, I think that's the majority of owners of these sports leagues have that feeling when it comes to this kind of stuff. Whether they're going to say it or not, my feeling is that's the predominant feeling.
All right, we have some news. Some news here about the Major League Baseball postseason. Don't worry, Red Sox fans, doesn't apply to you. But for everybody else, there could be some big news here. We'll get to that next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
consider them part of your benefits package.
That was the dumbest 30 seconds we've ever had on this show.
Solak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. It's 12:54. Our Cannon Johnson here with Sarge Riley back there in the glass case. We got some news here from Jeff Passan, which I see him on ESPN right now. And I can't hear what he's saying because we're on the air, but I do know that he was just on the Pat McAfee show, and he broke some news. T-Bone, if we have it, here is Jeff Passan on Pat McAfee today.
The fact that they are now with no positive tests and with a month left in the season, they're going to bubble for the playoffs, Pat. It's
where
are they going to be? Yeah, I mean, it's going to, like, the plan right now is at the end of the season for the last week, even if you are at home, you're going to be staying in a hotel. And the reason for that is they want to essentially get these teams isolated from everyone so they can fly down to Texas or California. I think the NL playoffs are going to be in Houston and Arlington is the plan. The AL playoffs are going to be in LA and San Diego, perhaps. And they are going to, they're going to bubble essentially. And then the World Series at this point, in all likelihood, is going to be neutral site, Arlington, Texas. Not in stone yet, but players are talking about it. They're getting through the details.
Okay, so he says they're not in stone yet. But it sounds like he knows the places, he knows what's happening, he knows where they're going to be. The American League is going to be here, the National League is going to be there, and the World Series is going to be here. They are moving from a non-bubble, this weird regional thing that they're doing where only the teams in the certain regions play each other, which is freaking stupid, by the way. It doesn't really do anything. The Red Sox still had to go all the way the hell down to Florida and Georgia to play the Braves and the Rays and the Marlins. So, I mean, what really are you saving here? That never really made any sense to me. But that's what they're moving on from now. And once they've narrowed it down to just the playoff teams, again, Red Sox fans, don't need to listen to this part. but now that it's narrowed down to the playoff teams, that seems like the move now.
What am I missing, though? The Major League Baseball players, they don't just – they got to sign off on everything.
Right.
I've never seen anything like it. They want a rule change in the game of baseball. The players got to say it's okay for them. I thought this would all be pre-negotiated. Like, I just, this seems like a pretty big kind of change of direction that the Major League Baseball is taking that I would think they need to get the players to sign off on before they do, right?
Yeah.
This is a completely mid-season change of direction type of a decision. I'm curious if the players are all okay with them doing this.
I think what they're realizing is that we can't afford to miss playoff games. We can't afford to do that. We're running out of time here. We've already had to reschedule all these Cardinals games. The Cardinals, I mean,
have they played more than 10 games yet?
They've played 22 games now.
Okay.
Because they had to jam in all those doubleheaders, which is what they're going to have to be doing for the rest of the time. Other teams have played like 30 games. They're still very, very far behind. But they're starting to catch up now. The Cardinals are catching up. And they are actually a playoff team right now. If the playoffs were to start today, I think the Cardinals would be in the playoffs. So that's an important thing to sort of keep in mind here. Red Sox aren't making the playoffs. Again, don't worry about that. But as far as these other teams, they're now going to, it seems anyway, go and bubble up for the postseason, which is what the NBA is doing. It's what the NHL has done. They also had, you know, their in the NHL's case, round robin, in the NBA's case, those 8 regular season games played in the bubble. Major League Baseball has decided to play 60 games outside of the bubble and then bubble up for the postseason. And I think they're just doing that because they're running out of time.
This is new news, though, right? This wasn't the plan all along, Christian, or am I?
No. So, this was not the plan all along.
Okay, so I'm just curious, like, again, if I'm a player, it's like, okay, if that's what you think is best, I'd be okay. But the Major League Baseball players, they dictate terms about what happens. My feeling is this is going to be, I don't know, there's going to be pushback from the players to do this. If there's not, then no big deal. But I'm a little bit surprised that the Major League Baseball would switch everything it's been doing to this new format, and the players just being like, fine, okay, because they argue about every little thing.
Yeah, they do. They tend to make a big deal of mountains out of molehills here. I will say this, though, if it was coming from the owners, then the players can't say, hey, you guys aren't looking out for us. This is the very definition of looking out for them. We're going to get make it so you don't have to travel anymore. Don't put yourself at risk anymore, even though you've been doing it for the last 2 months. We get to the playoffs, and we're going to put you in this bubble. We're going to take care of you, make sure nothing happens.
The families get to go to the bubble? Is that because that's a big thing, guys. Now they're leaving their homes. Now they're going to this bubble. Are families going to have access? I think there's just a big can of worms there that you got to kind of keep in mind as well.
True, although the baseball playoffs don't take as long as the other ones do. I would say that there's not as many teams involved. It's not as much of a grind. It doesn't sort of stretch on as long. And I think that'll make somewhat of a difference. Maybe not a big one, but it's not like they're going to have to be away from their families for months and months and months. It's probably going to be a couple of weeks, 1 month maybe tops. I'd say.
Do you think this? Just if you don't let me take a right hand turn here. Do you think this is a what's going on with Major League Baseball is a precursor to potentially what could happen with football?
Absolutely, I do. I do. And I think that the NFL is going to have a much harder time just because it's not going to be just the playoff teams. If the NFL wants to do something like this and they want to do it during the season, they're going to have to find a spot, an area, where they can, first of all, house all those players, house all the coaches, have medical facilities on site, have places to practice and play and do everything. I mean, it's like an Olympic village they're going to have to need, to do a bubble for the NFL. It's going to be a real tough road to hoe there. But, yeah, I think that could absolutely be a direction that they go in. It's just going to be a lot harder for football.
I have this is a feeling I have, just because I know the nature of the power brokers in the NHL and how business is done in the NHL, in the NFL. My prediction is there's going to be a lot of shenanigans when it comes to the COVID testing. There's going to be a lot of kind of misinformation, and I think potentially there's guys going to maybe be playing that have it that the NFL doesn't want you to know. I think it's ripe with chances of teams not following protocols and following the rules. So I think that could be a big story in the NFL this year.
Yeah, no question about it.
I think it'd just be a mess.
All right, let's take a quick baseball call here before the top of the hour. Pete is in Delaware. Hi, Pete.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Hey, Pete.
Hey, two things. First, on the Mets, because I've been a long-suffering Mets fan. If there's a public relations nightmare, they're a magnet for it. I have never seen an organization worse than the New York Mets in all sports of finding a public relations nightmare. So I'm not surprised by this. As a Mets fan, you can only laugh.
Are you Team Wilpon or Team Brody, Pete?
Oh, I hate Wilpon. I'm sorry. I don't hate anybody, but no, I very much
dislike. But if I did hate someone, it would be the Wilpon family, right? One of those?
Yeah, they just don't treat, not that any of them treat fans well, but they go above and beyond to make sure that you know you're not wanted. Mm. Let me just put it that way.
Okay.
But hey, I mean, what you guys just brought up real quick about the moving to L.A. and possibly Texas, I have no problem with it. I just don't understand the venue of L.A. It's like COVID hell right now.
Yeah.
Still is. How are you going to bubble guys in L.A.? It's not like Orlando where those guys have room to roam around after what they do. They have a big facility. They can walk around, go to restaurants that are within the bubble. How are you going to do that in L.A.? And in Canada, as you guys know, it's not that bad in Canada. But now you're going into places that have had uprisings of COVID. I'm just trying to figure out how you're going to bubble these guys.
Well, Pete, they're doing it in Florida, right? NBA's doing it in Florida. MLS did it in Florida. Florida was the epicenter of the whole world with COVID-19, not just the U.S. I mean, at one point when they first went down there, and I don't know if that's still the case. I actually think it isn't, but Florida at the time was the COVID-19 epicenter of the planet, and they went down there and did it, and they're making it work. So I feel like baseball, despite the fact that they are run by a bunch of morons, including the guy at the top, I think is certainly capable of doing something like that. Basketball can do it in Florida, then I feel like baseball should be able to do it in L.A.
I agree. It's just they have to. Again, I'm just curious what the players think about this. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard if there's opposition from the players to all of a sudden change what their plans were to go to.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.